on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Good to have you with us. Sunday night around Australia and across the world via the web. How does freedom of religion and belief affect health and well-being? Well, to all those who don't believe out there, this could be a pretty important question. But if you do believe, are there benefits in belief for you? It was self-evident to the Pilgrim Fathers who left Britain to establish a colony in the New World free of religious persecution some 400 years ago. Americans are still giving thanks for the event, as many experienced in the last week or so. We in Australia have been much more reticent about things of the spirit. In recent years, as we've become a country of increasingly varied faith traditions, some such questions have become easier to probe. And this week, the Human Rights Commission and the Victorian Health Promotion Foundation, as part of a wider look into human rights and freedom of belief in Australia, have announced a study into freedom of belief and well-being. The study will take public submissions until February 2009. And this evening, on Sunday night, we're going to take a look at the study and also probe some of the wider questions concerning religion, health and well-being. And you can have your say by joining us on 1300 800 222, or 1800. I'll give you the number a little later on. A little later in the program. Well, don't ring now. Save up your number and you can call us shortly. In our second hour this evening, we'll be confronting one of the most dramatic examples of human rights in the world today, particularly the abuse of. The tragic plight of the people of Zimbabwe was compounded this week with news of a cholera outbreak and hundreds of deaths. Tonight, we'll be joined by one of those caught at the centre of this maelstrom, the Anglican Archbishop of Harare, the capital of Zimbabwe, a man who's seen his cathedral closed and his clergy harassed. That's Bishop Bakare of Harare in about an hour's time. Then, of course, the usual fun and games. The Inquisition, a draft of the good life with Noel Debien, some music and the chat room. And this evening, Ian Barnes will join us in the chat room. And here's a song to begin from Neil Young from the 2005 album Prairie Wind, When God Made Me.
Was he thinking about my country or the color of my skin? Was he thinking about my religion and the way I worshipped him? Did he create just me in his image, or when God made me, when God made me? Was he planning only for believers? Who just had faith? Did he envision all the wars that were fought in his name? Did he think there was only one way to be close to him?
Give us the gift of love.
delightful little song from Neil Young from his 2005 album Prairie Wind, When God Made Me. Now, we do get lots of requests for the music we play on Sunday nights during the week. It's one of the most frequent telephone calls I have. Why did you play? You can look it up on the website. We put the tracks that we play every Sunday night up on our website. And if you want to go to the website, it's abc.net.au/Sunday Nights. And there will be, and the latest program with all its details will be on the website, including a podcast of the first 2 hours each and every Sunday night. Well, how does freedom of religion and belief affect health and well-being? As I said earlier in the program at the beginning, it was self-evident to the Pilgrim Fathers who left Britain to establish a colony in the New World free of religious persecution some 400 years ago. Well, almost 400 years ago. Americans gave thanks for Thanksgiving last week for that event. They were fleeing, that is the early pilgrims to America, among other things, they were fleeing religious discrimination. And discrimination can be at the heart of many of the issues facing subgroups in our community, particularly a multicultural, multi-ethnic, and increasingly so in Australia, a multi-religious community. And the background to much of the study that's being undertaken at the moment is that question of discrimination. So let us begin this evening by welcoming our guests into the program from Vic Health, Todd Harper. Todd, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you in, and you'll doubtless explain to us in just a minute the background behind this study. And we'll also be joined on the phone shortly by Tom Calmer from the Human Rights Commission. And also in the studio, it's good to welcome Professor Gary Bomer, Professor Emeritus, Monash University, Reverend Professor Gary Bomer, Reverend Dr. Gary Bomer. Gary, you have so many appellations, it's very hard to list them, but it's good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be with you, John.
Let's first go to this question of how the whole thing arose and what the context is. Todd, briefly, how did Vic Health get into the act here?
Well, this project is a partnership with the Australian Human Rights Commission to explore the notion of religion and the impact that religion and faith have on health. And I think it's fair to say that there is certainly quite strong evidence around issues to do with discrimination, particularly ethnic-based discrimination, but it seems less so on the subject of faith and its impact on health. There are, of course, some indicators to suggest that it would have an impact on health. We know, for example, that religion or faith can have an impact on a wide variety of factors that impact on health. For example, cultural norms around exercise, around diet, also in relation to drug taking, particularly with alcohol and tobacco.
Look, I'm sure the Seventh-day Adventists and the Salvation Army would be cheering from the rafters to hear you say that.
Yes, well, I'm not necessarily suggesting that's the panacea to get smoking levels down to as low as they could go, but it certainly is the case that they do have an impact on health behaviours in those instances.
Let's go to the background of this study, and at this point it would be good to introduce Tom Calmer from the Human Rights Commission. The Human Rights Commissioner, Tom Calmer. Tom, welcome to the program.
Good evening, John, and good evening, listeners.
Thanks for taking our call. Tom, this study from the Human Rights Commission aspect has a background in this wider question of discrimination, does it not?
Yes, it does. Earlier this year, in August actually, we launched a major project that was looking at the freedom of religion and belief in the 21st century. And it was building on a report that we did in 1998, and that looked at freedom of religion and belief, and particularly through Article 18 of the Universal Declaration on Human Rights and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. They refer to Article 18, and in fact, it's in our Constitution, in Article 116, about the freedom of religion and the separation of powers between government and religion. And so it's a culmination of all of those. Some of what's been manifesting in Australia in the last few years, following on from 9/11, the persecution of some or the discrimination that's been directed towards some of the religious groups. And so we've mounted this major project. In fact, Gary Bomer is he's one of our strategic partners with RMIT, and we hope to have submissions in by January this year, this coming year, and by towards the end of the year we'll have a full report out.
Now, there's some dimension of this which, of course, comes out of the background too with race discrimination and Aboriginality as well. There's a component there that is of interest in this corner of the arena as well.
Well, it does, because it's not only just about religions, but it's about belief systems, and for a lot of Indigenous people around Australia, we have different belief systems, and how that the practice of those religions and beliefs, and whether they're being restricted in any way, is an issue. And as Todd had indicated, that's one of the significant impacts on health, both mental health and on physical health. If people lose control of their lives, if they find that they're discriminated against, they have a negative impact, and it just compounds. And so part of what we're trying to do in this project is the overall project, Freedom, Religion and Belief Project, is to look at certain aspects. One of them is particularly the impacts of physical and mental well-being. Another one is religion and the arts, the law, judiciary and religion, about the media, journalism and freedom of religion and belief and the expression of that within the media, Indigenous spirituality, as you mentioned, education and religion, the intersection between religion and gender equity and equality, and also in relation to religion and racism, and particularly for cultural groups who practice a belief system that may not fit into a mainstream religion.
Before we get on to that last point, let me just ask you a point about Indigenous spirituality. One of the things that's been observed, particularly over recent months with the intervention, is that it is very hard at a certain level to divorce cultural practice and spirituality from health, and where you have one-size-fits-all programs that may not take account of the individual spiritual practices and cultural practices in a certain area, you can end up doing more harm than good by fracturing some of the deeply held cultural principles which may drive a particular practices in a particular area.
Definitely. And that's one of the dangers that we have, is when we try and suggest that with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people that they're all one belief system and that they're all the same, and that we have to treat each of the groups individually, because whilst there's a lot of commonality, there's a lot of difference between practices. And I guess one of the big testaments to the importance of culture and religious belief is what Dave Chalmers has said. It was reported in the media that after being in the territory for 18 months, and listeners might recall that Dave was the person who headed up the anti-intervention from the government side, he realised the importance of culture and religion and the culture, particularly in language, to Aboriginal people across the territory, and the need to be able to work with people instead of trying to impose an outside practice upon people. And that gets right back to the whole basis of respecting belief, respecting and understanding the different cultures that exist out there, and being able to support them rather than to try and bring in an overlay of a different approach that might not be conducive with the way people actually live.
There is one final question I'll ask you on that. That is, what do you do when you find ultimately that one cultural practice may be in fact dysfunctional to a community, to the wider community, may have relatively limited functions within a community, but it can be recognised that certain practices may be found to be dysfunctional?
Well, yeah, dysfunctional, or they might be in conflict to what mainstream belief systems are, or practices and or ideologies of governments, as an example. And I think it goes back a little bit to the previous government and their whole approach towards trying to control the recognition of Indigenous cultural practice in law. And I think it's important to remember that in Australia we practice the rule of law, and that we have a legal system that people need to comply with, and that's the mainstream Westminster system. What happens, and this is what I think we'll find in this report, because there's been evidence in a whole other range of manifestations, and it's all about people's understanding of what human rights are about, understanding what obligations go with human rights, what responsibilities are, and to address any conflicts between culture and cultural and religious practices that might conflict against mainstream the legal system. And that's not only for Indigenous peoples, but there's other groups in Australia that have practices that may not or that may conflict with you know, mainstream law. And so we need to be able to address that.
Tom Kelmer, thank you so much for taking our call tonight.
Thank you, John.
Tom Kelmer, the Human Rights Commission. On Sunday night on ABC Radio Around Australia, we're talking about how does freedom of religion and belief affect health and well-being. It's the title of a new inquiry set up by Vic Health and the Human Rights Commission. They're taking public submissions between now and February. And if you'd like to be part of that process, you can join us here on Sunday night, or you can take the trouble to write a submission. I'd now like to introduce Professor Gary Barmer to the discussion. Gary, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Gary, there are a number of issues raised there with Tom Kelmer. One of them, though, that I didn't go into with him, but he alluded to, is that events since 9/11. And, of course, he was alluding to the fact that many Muslims became instantly demonised across the planet. And you've spent a lot of time working over recent years with young Muslims and their perception of the way they're received in a community.
Well, yes, there are two things I wanted to pick up. First of all, following Tom Kelmer, I think that one of the very refreshing changes in the discourse is the re-recognition, or the finally recognizing the reality and importance of Indigenous spirituality, belief, and practice. Ever since almost the first Europeans set foot on this continent, Indigenous spiritualities have been denied their existence or packaged into one, etc. So it provides a very important starting point for this whole process, and I was pleased to hear that, but I think we need to underscore that as both an opportunity but also a model that's provided to us as a way of approaching a variety of things. Yes, Muslims since 2001 have experienced a great deal of vilification and of hostility. This has been documented by other studies by the Human Rights Commissions, the ISMA Listen study, and the impact on people who are vilified or whose dignity is assailed for their religious belief is substantial. It undermines one's sense of well-being, one's sense of integration with the community. It drives people into privacy when being part of the wider community is what's needed. And all of these reactions have been there, although I must say that one of the most healthy responses has been that many Muslims and many Muslim communities have taken it as an opportunity to engage with the wider Australian population to completely offset both the vilification and the negative impact of vilification on their communities.
So there's been a positive side to the reaction.
Exactly. It cuts negatively, but there are times when the community, and particularly the Muslim community in Australia, has used it as an opportunity to say, hey, look, we're here, we're real, we're part of you, we can be engaged with like anybody else, come see how normal, natural, and everything else we are. And I think that has actually pushed forward the interfaith dialogue and interfaith understanding in Australia in very healthy ways. So yes, vilification hurts, some communities can respond, but it takes a lot of effort.
And of course, just at an anecdotal level, many people have commented that one of the key elements to the breakdown of Aboriginal societies has been the destruction of
Absolutely.
Their sense of who they are through their belief systems.
Yep.
And it's directly linked to the alcohol. Todd Harper, let's come back to you and Vic Health here. What do Vic Health particularly want to approach in this survey? What are you trying to tease out?
Well, I suppose what the primary purpose here is to gather the evidence that is available and evidence that we need to to explore further, to strengthen our understanding of the relationship between faith and health. I think it's fair to say that if you were to compare, for example, what we know of the impact in smoking on health, what we know about the impact in alcohol on health, we don't yet have that richness, I think, at this point in relation to religion and health. I think there's a lot to suggest, and we've heard that from the previous speakers, there's a lot to suggest that there is a relationship, both positive and negative, in some ways, that can be at play here. So we need to understand those before we can start to then look at what are the strategies we can be putting in place to harness the protective factors of religion that impact on health, and better understand those aspects which potentially could have a negative impact. And I suppose principally that could be occurring in the areas of discrimination, where we were to see unchecked discrimination, which we know from our broader studies that have been undertaken does have an impact on health. But as yet, there hasn't been the same richness of studies that have been undertaken to explore the impact of religious discrimination and health.
Potentially this crosses a number of boundaries. Are you going to get into that, what's become a bit of a difficult chestnut over recent years for many religious organisations in employment practices, like a religious organisation? So we want, for example, if you're a Christian, we will only employ Christians in our organisation, and you run up against state discrimination laws there. Now, there are boundaries here that push everywhere, don't they?
Well, I guess that could be the case, and I'd suggest it's more important to understand those than be frightened of them. We would certainly be hoping that this process does bring out a good discussion, a sharing of evidence, and an identification of what further studies and evidence we may need to commission to better understand this. And I think if we can start to do that and have that discussion, it will be an important step. One of the important aspects, I suspect, will be, as I mentioned, in relation to discrimination. We know increasingly now the impact of ethnic and race-based discrimination and its impact on health. I think that has led to very productive outcomes, how we can actually nurture and harness freedom of those freedoms associated with both ethnic, the rich ethnic culture we have in Australia. So if we can start to understand that, I think we can start really turn the debate around in some aspects and focus on what are the positives here, what are the opportunities we actually have to strengthen the diversity of Australian culture.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio Around Australia. Does freedom of religion and belief affect health and well-being? 1300 800 222. If you've got any questions of our panel, it's the topic of a new study being launched by Vic Health and the Human Rights Commission that will be open for submissions for the next couple of months. 1300 800 222. If you've got any observations you wish to pass on that we can read to our panel, or if you'd like to contribute yourself by way of a telephone call. On the line at the moment now we have Associate Professor Jim Forrest of the Department of Human Geography at Macquarie University. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Thank you for joining us. Now, I understand you were part of a study that has in some ways backgrounded this study that's about to take place.
Yes, that's right. About 18 months ago, we did a study on racism and health for the Victorian Health Commission, and we've expanded that to most other states. What it shows is that, of course, religion is closely linked to ethnicity. The major religions are normally associated with major ethnic groups. And what happens there, we found, was that it impacts very much on the mental health of people. Physical health's a different matter, which others have spoken about on the program already. But our emphasis was on what slides over from self-worth into mental health problems.
So self-worth is the key element here.
Yes, it is. And there's two aspects to this we found. One is people's attitudes towards religious groups, ethnic groups, on the one hand, and actual experience that people have of discrimination. They're not necessarily the same thing. And I hope that one of the things the study will do is have a look at how people actually experience discrimination.
And this is discrimination of a religious sort, which is tied, in your experience, largely to ethnicity. That is, it's when people can identify people by the way they dress or the way they look that you get the beginnings or the hard edge of the discriminatory practice.
Yes, that's right. I think the old days where people discriminate amongst Christian groups, for example, you know, Catholics, Protestants, that kind of thing, are largely over, and we've shifted over to something which is immigrant or ethnic group stroke religion based.
Mm. Is discrimination one of those things that is almost sort of seems built into the human psyche? We just apply it in different ways at different times.
Yeah, yes, you're right. One of the aspects of the studies that we've done across the states, which is only just now coming out, is that attitude doesn't necessarily equate with experience. In some cases it does, but in some parts of the country, people have quite a good attitude on all the normal indicators, and yet the experience of people in those areas is quite negative. You know, it's quite bad. In other words, attitude doesn't equate with experience.
And what does one draw out of that?
Well, one of the things we draw out of it, and it came out in the Vic Health study we did on racism and health, was that everywhere is different. Mm. You can't use one approach or even one generic kind of approach for the whole country or even for different states. You've got to look within the states. Parts of Melbourne, for example, the same people react differently from their counterparts in other parts of Melbourne. In other words, you've got to have something, and I think this will come out of the study, which is tailored to local areas, local communities, whatever the particular mix is, that kind of thing.
It seems to come down to whatever irritates, and irritation seems to be something that's spread locally.
Yes, some areas people get on quite well, but it's funny that way. In Sydney, for instance, you'll get some of the inner parts of Sydney where people get on pretty well. In other parts, with the same religious mix, they don't get on so well. So what we have to do is to go in and find out why these differences, why it works in some areas, doesn't work in others.
Jim Forrest, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Righto.
Thank you. Jim Forrest, Professor Jim Forrest from Macquarie University. You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. We'll take some calls from listeners now. We've been looking at this question of belief and health, particularly in the light of a study being conducted, launched this weekend by the Human Rights Commission and the Vic Health. And we're going to sort of, we've looked at the discriminatory aspect of this in the first part of our discussion. We'll take some calls on that, but there's also, of course, other aspects of religion and health. But let's take one or two calls. Let's say first go to Peter in Albury. Hello, Peter. What is it you'd like to say?
Yes, I actually just want to clarify whether or not the study will look at discrimination within religions, not so much against the religions. I'm just thinking with Catholicism, discussion of women within the church, there are some areas which simply Catholics are no longer allowed to discuss. It's actually going against the church to discuss the role of women within the church becoming priests, for example.
Yes, discrimination and women. Now, they're both Gary and... Well, Gary, let's have your observation on that first.
A study looks for input from all people in Australia, any people in Australia, about any issue related to freedom of religion and belief, and in this case, possible discrimination or other kinds of harmful effects. Certainly, a submission along that line would be welcome. Anyone who feels that their freedom to be who they are is either enhanced or limited by religion, or their freedom to be religious is being hampered by either some state practice or some communal practice or something else, all of these things will be very welcome, because this is a rich area. We aren't sure at the the outset what the conclusions will be. This is very open to input, and we are going around the nation listening to people, and the submissions, call for submissions, is very real, and they will be taken very seriously. So any form of concern related to this issue will be more than welcome.
The issue of religion is particular, religion and women is particularly fraught in this area, Gary, because it's not simply about Christianity. I mean, Sydney Anglicans differ from Melbourne Anglicans, Catholics differ from Protestants. But then you move out towards Muslim groups, and the way their attitudes to religion may differ within different Muslim groups, and their attitude to gender. This is a particular, you use the word rich, I might use the word fraught.
Well, it is rich, it is fraught, and I think that this is one of the areas where we will have, I expect to hear some voices. It's a moving area, it's a developing area, and I don't know of a religious group that is completely clean on the topic. Unfortunately, as Max Weber pointed out, both the military and religion seem to be laggards when it comes to certain kinds of cultural change.
Thank you very much for your call, Peter. We will move on. George in South Melbourne. Hello, George. What would you like to say?
I would love to say that fear coming from false evidence appearing real seems to be in every religion that puts women in a subservient situation. I mean, if man does not know man, how could he ever begin to know women? And we just seem... like Mother Teresa in India, of all places, so many people, I don't know what percentage of the world's population, but she was the only one that could cast her eyes upon all the fallen ones. And so many of them wouldn't allow a woman to touch them because that is their belief.
Yes, continuing on that line about women, it seems to be a significant factor that the group will have to address, the study will have to address. Thanks for your call, George. We're going to have to move on. I want to pick up, Todd, a couple of the things that you alluded to, that this is going to be wider than just the issue of discrimination. You've actually not used the title discrimination in the description of the study. It's a religion, freedom of belief and health. This means it's open to discussions about religion as health-giving activity or evidence-based studies of religion and health. And you mentioned early on things like alcohol abuse and other things. I recall reading an article by one of Australia's more prominent Aboriginal boxers about the therapeutic role that becoming a Muslim had had on his life, gone from a life of somewhat unstructured but strong, a lot of capacity, into a life that was disciplined, and so his capacities were enhanced. That is, adopting Islam had given his life structure and focus. Now, this is something that many religious traditions would claim is the key to understanding the benefits of religion. You're going to be able to look at that sort of thing as well?
I absolutely. And I think that what you describe is, I think, an example of the issues that we'd like to address in this study. It's not only the issues to do with physical health, but mental health and the impact that religion can have on mental health. We'd certainly like to explore those issues and recognise that we actually have an obligation, I think, as a society to address these issues and understand them more fully. When you consider we have over 40% or about 40% of people who have are born overseas or have a parent overseas, we do have a great diversity in our society. It makes sense, therefore, that given that diversity, given that richness, religion, faith is likely to have an impact on the way that we see ourselves, the identity that we adopt both individually and amongst our networks, whether they be religious networks, social networks, work networks. So we need to understand those as a way of better understanding how we can actually protect and promote the health of those within our community, given that it can be such a profound part of many people's lives.
Do you think religion is good for your health or destructive of your health? Give us a call, 1300 800 222. Have you been discriminated against because of your religious disposition. For example, as an observant Muslim or an observant Orthodox Jew, conservative Jew, have you been discriminated against because of your clothing? Is there a difference between kids making fun of you and direct religious discrimination? If you go to a different RE class at school and some kid makes fun of you for it, is that subjective discrimination, or is it? Are we talking much wider? Are there health-giving benefits to religion, which you'd like to exemplify for yourself? You'd like to tell us about. What about religions that may, in fact, be disadvantageous to your health? Should Jehovah's Witnesses have the right to refuse blood transfusions on behalf of minors? What about the case we talked about a couple of weeks ago where some parents in England were praised for allowing their daughter, who was a minor, to refuse a potential life-saving organ transplant? It comes into the area of religion, belief. What do you think? 1-300-800-222. Gary Bomer, toxic religious beliefs. There are some out there.
John, I want to first of all hit the positive side. I think we can go into toxicity very quickly, but certainly the effects of meditation are well documented. The consistent findings out of the states are that those who are more religiously active report higher levels of happiness, happier marriages, etc. It's almost so good in terms of relations to health that in terms of evidence-based policy, some argue we ought to send people to churches. And of course, if you go to Hillsong, you'll get yourself a really good aerobic workout and go out feeling better. Now, we must pay attention to that stuff.
Well, John Wesley also suggested that, the scholars and followers of John Wesley have looked at the outcome of the Protestant Reformation and the evangelicals and suggested it is the way to health and happiness and wealth indeed.
Indeed, that the discipline that you mentioned, the capacity to order life and to see life as purposeful, is one of the things that you do learn in religious training, and that does apparently help a large number of people. It doesn't help everybody, but it's there. Toxicity, yes, can also be there, and it's very interesting how you might judge that toxicity. As a sociologist, I'm aware that there are times when religious beliefs can erode social cohesion as much as it does promote it in other occasions.
So, and should people be free to practice? Where are the limits to tolerance there? That becomes a difficult question.
Absolutely,
doesn't it?
And no society permits everything to go. There are things that are either cultural or religious that are prescribed, and as Tom Kelma said, we live in a society that does believe in the practice of law and following the rule of law, and that is an important part of being a member and a productive part of this community. So we need always to watch whether our laws are enabling or are preventing things which might otherwise be healthy, but what are the criteria by which we make these judgments? Criteria of social cohesion are one sort of things. Criteria of health are important. We have laws against and are opposed to female genital mutilation, which is not a religious practice but a cultural one. I think we ought to explore how it is that foot binding stopped in China over a period of about 10 to 20 years at the most, right across one of the biggest country in the world. How did that practice end? Again, something that began as nobody would be married without it, and all of a sudden it became a non-issue.
Well, how did it become a non-issue?
That is a very good question. I've read only one or two studies of it, but they did not give me the good oil on how it was that that practice ended. But it's a particular case where a practice was deemed to be injurious, unhelpful, and it was stopped in the between about 1917 and 1925.
Extraordinary. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio. We're taking your calls on freedom of belief and health. Some more calls. We're going to talk to Kate in Melbourne. Hello, Kate. Good to have you on the line. What would you like to say?
I was just going to raise a couple of points from the perspective of being Buddhist.
Yes.
I've never been discriminated against when I've mentioned that I'm Buddhist. And, in fact, usually I get a puzzled look more than anything else. And I wonder if part of the reason is that Buddhism isn't seen to be a threatening either historically or currently, a threatening philosophy. There's never been a war fought or a nation conquered in the name of Buddhism, and some of the current representatives of the Buddhist faith, for instance, the Dalai Lama, are seen as fairly peaceful people, except perhaps in the eyes of the Chinese, who don't necessarily agree with that point of view about the Dalai Lama, even though a lot of Chinese are Buddhists themselves.
Yes, and Tibetan Buddhists may be feeling persecution for precisely that reason.
That is true, probably within China. Well, if you watch the program that was on the ABC about Tibet, then that's certainly true. But if you look at Australian society, I don't think you would necessarily say that, except there were demonstrations, anti-Tibetan demonstrations during the Olympic Games, torch relay, when the Tibetans were protesting then.
Yes, which seems to go to the point that Professor Jim Forrest made earlier, that each of these things can really be tied down to particular local expressions and even particular attitudes at particular times. Gary Boehmer.
Yes, well, different groups do receive greater or lesser degrees of acceptance in Australia. Buddhism enjoys a very high level of acceptance and understanding, even though there are places in the world where it's not as shiny golden as it appears to be from Australia. It's very interesting to look at the levels of acceptance. The Jehovah's Witnesses generally hold up the lowest level of acceptance in Australia, in no small part because they knock on your doors on Saturday mornings.
That's an annoyance factor rather than a discrimination factor.
It sure is when it happens. But Australians being very laid back about religion in terms of the general approach are a little leery of people who are giving visible expression to religion. And so there's some kind of, it's not so much a response to religion as should you be that serious about it. So there's also a kind of reaction to taking religion more seriously than makes many Australians comfortable. And I notice that when I wear my collar, I get different kinds of looks than if I'm just in a bow tie.
Bow ties are really eccentric, Gary.
Yeah, I know. but that's the choice for me. It's quite serious that with the low temperature assumption about how one should take religion in Australia, somebody who takes it very seriously may feel perhaps not so much discriminated against as that they're under pressure to tone it down.
Kate, thanks for your call. We're going to say hi to Joe in Western Australia. Hello, Joe. Welcome. What would you like to say?
Hello, Father Cleary. Sorry, I've only just switched on and heard, but I didn't catch the name of your guest. I do apologise.
Ah, well, we've got two guests in our studio, Todd Harper from Vic Health and Reverend Professor Gary Boehmer, from Emeritus Professor from Monash University.
Hello to both of your guests.
And what would you like to say?
Greetings, Joe.
Hello. Look, what I wanted to point out is that in regards to your topic, health is very much connected to spirituality because, in my opinion and over my research and learning and developing my own spirituality, I find that if you engage in spirituality and I've found it does make you healthy because you have a healthier attitude towards everybody. And the thing that I find critical is what a lot of people are missing the point, rather, is that if you actually follow the teachings of Christ and, Buddha or Muhammad, for that matter, they're all very similar. And they all, if you take their core belief system into account and interpret that correctly, you'll find it's a message of peace and love. And, if you can sort of, get that out in the open, you'll have people scratching their heads, what the hell are we fighting and killing each other for? That was the point I wanted to make.
Yeah, very useful. Thank you very much for that. One count certainly in favour of. Thanks, Joe. From Stephanie in Geelong, who wants to express a view. Stephanie, hi, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you.
What would you like to say?
Just when you were talking about, you know, the relationship between health and religion, I've had a few encounters with different, you know, health professionals, like on the, in the counselling line. And when I went to see one in particular, I was talking about my faith as, a, you know, something, you know, that was important to me, and, you know, said that I had a personal belief in a personal God, which is, you know, one of the foundations of Christian beliefs. And he basically laughed at me and sort of undermined my faith and basically insinuated that I had sort of some sort of mental problem because I still, you know, held a belief in a personal God. I was just absolutely dumbfounded.
Do you find your belief system does give you a healthier attitude to life?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be here without it. I mean, you know, I've been through, like, a marriage breakdown. I lost my house. I lost my car. I lost, you know, a lot of things. But I was okay because I still had my faith to hang on to. And that was the only thing I had left, basically. And I knew that I'd be okay.
Thank you for your observations. Todd Harper, we touched earlier on just how wide this survey can go and how deep it can go into people's attitudes. And at a certain point, you are going to get down to the level of almost personal testimony, aren't you? Where people will tell you, well, look, this works for me. How do you begin to assess that sort of submission against your criteria?
Well, this is where I guess we need to be looking at some of the opportunities to strengthen our research across the broad population. There's no doubt, I suspect, that we will receive the a large number of expressions of interest or comments from people who, from a very personal experience. That experience is entirely relevant, of course, for those people and will have a significant impact on their mental health and well-being. What I think the challenge for this process will be is to how this aggregates up into at a community level. What are some of the trends and themes that we can observe here? What are the impacts of religion, spirituality on things like work, like education, like housing, all of which we know have an important part of who we are as a people and an important impact on our health. I suspect one of the other opportunities that this process will develop is the opportunities for more research and helping us to identify where we might take some of those research questions in the future, because it can be very difficult to go from individual stories to what we can then glean as some of the important implications for society. But I think that's the strength of this process. It will help us to start to tease out some of those issues. One of the best places to start that process is by having the discussion which we're having tonight, and we also hope will continue through this process.
Gary Bomer, I can see you, your eyes lighting up at the prospect of research projects on into the future.
But it's wonderful, John. But I do want to pick up on what Stephanie said. I think one of the places where people feel put down is when their religion and religious spirituality is not recognized by health professionals or by counseling. I've heard that time and time again. And respect for that, I hope that we're able to generate more respect and understanding through the research that this project will pull together, so that those people who work in this area are more compelled to be respectful of a wider diversity of views that may or may not agree with their own.
So you think there is a serious,
there is a very serious
problem
issue
with health,
there along
with health professionals.
Yes.
Psychiatry, of course, for many years did see itself as divided into a couple of camps. The Freudian and the Jungians and various other shades were at war with each other, and this question of spirituality was in some ways at the heart of it.
Yes. It's difficult to find a counselor who is both competent, well-trained, etc., and will take your spirituality seriously, and you almost need advertising along that line.
On Sunday night, we've been talking about faith, belief, freedom of belief, and the health and well-being of your soul, but your body as well. Time for just a couple more calls before we have to draw the discussion to a close. To Michael in Melbourne. Hello, Michael. Welcome to you.
Hi as well. I don't often respond to radio, so I might sound a bit nervous. Okay.
That's okay.
So My belief is a bit different to the people that have called in before, that spirituality is a healthy thing. I personally believe that it teaches us not to change our mind, not to actively search for the right answers, rather to sort of be brainwashed at an early age to the right answers, and to be taught this is the way. Why? Because it is.
That's a very important question you've raised there. And Gary Bamer, we're going to have to treat this very briefly. But surely it is the case that some people can be held almost in an artificially healthy condition by a rigid set of beliefs, which if they those beliefs are broken or stretched or strained, their world falls apart.
Well, that can happen. It's very rare, and most religious groups have enough internal diversity about whatever their beliefs and practices are and their and the richness of interpretation that, in fact, questioning is always going on within the communities. There are communities who completely stop questioning, who have stock answers for everything, but they are quite rare and not to be confused with the bulk of healthy spiritualities out there. So the issue raised is a serious one should it happen, but the likelihood of it happening is very, very rare.
And these smaller groups occur usually as subsets of other larger groups. So people, if they want to break out, don't have to lose their faith. They merely move to one of the larger groups within that broader tradition.
That's often the case, that movement from a more withdrawn group will take the form of moving to a slightly more open group, etc. But the as I said, the kind of contestation around interpretation and application, etc., within most religious groups actually provides a very healthy context to learn how to debate, how to use evidence, how to relate faith to life as a creative activity and not something done as a result of some kind of doctrinal dictate.
Todd Harper of Vic Health, we've got about 30 seconds to go. Where should people write?
Well, we'd certainly encourage them to contact the contact Vic Health and the Human Rights Commission. I think this is a great opportunity, and we'd certainly look forward to a richness of debate that will surely follow.
And we'll put your details up on our website. So if you want details of the study and inquiry, look for Sunday Nights webpage, abc.net.au/Sunday Nights. We'll be back shortly with the Anglican Archbishop of Harare in Zimbabwe. You're on Sunday Nights.